Hi, everybody. This is Advice for Life with Lynn. Oh my gosh, it's our first video recording. Let's see how it goes. And audio recording, which, by the way, I've been doing this podcast for almost 10 years before it was a podcast. I remember I went on Facebook to say, so this is podcast, this is the app, this is what it does. So interesting. So this is Advice for Life with Lynn. Today's issue is, why do men feel the need to boss us around? Just kidding. That's what I wanted to call it. Today's issue is, what's the difference between helping your partner and fixing your partner? Or what's the difference between guiding your partner versus controlling the person from a man's point of view? Yeah, we got a man in the house. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Going through a difficult time in my relationship, and they said, well, you know, you're never going to learn this without being in a relationship. Relationships teach you about yourself. Amen. And how you respond to conflict or even joy and pain. And I said, so I think she's right. You cannot learn necessarily about, you can try to work on some things, but it's when other people tell you, you know, you don't have to teach me how to make eggs. I can.
Yes!
You have problems? She has answers. Getting down to the nitty-gritty with people who know what they're talking about. This is Advice for Life with Lynn.
So, this fixing or helping business, I know it really well. This is why I wanted to talk about it, because I am a recovering fixer. In my last marriage, I would tell my then husband how he should talk to our children, because I knew best, right? Two, I wanted him to create a better trusting relationship, you know, to be a better everything. I would sometimes remind him to call his mom, to talk to her more than 2 minutes. I would tell him how he should deal with his issues and his feelings, and how do you think that made him feel? Why is this a problem? Because he didn't ask for my input. And when somebody doesn't ask for your input, you are fixing them or trying to control them. And I now know, I didn't know then, I now know I was trying to fix him. I was trying to fix the outer world, old coping mechanism, to change him so I could feel better myself. And it was just kind of habit. I didn't even know I was doing it until I got divorced. So when I did work on myself and I married Mike, I vowed to really, really, really work on this fixing. And I've been doing so well for 8 years. So well that people are like, aren't you going to force him to go to the doctor? I'm like, I'm not his mom. And I don't want to be told what to do. So I don't tell him how to talk to his kids. It's hard. I don't tell him to go to the doctor. It's hard. I don't tell him how to drive unless I'm afraid for my life, which is every time I get in the car. You know, I'll say, I'm scared. And I'll say, you should. And now that I made this conscious decision to accept him and let him be and accept myself, I'm always aware, I'm acutely aware of when I'm not accepted. So it's kind of it's a gift and not a gift to be aware. So it's super annoying to be on the other side. I remember one time I was getting ready to go out. It was kind of recent, actually, like a year ago. And as we were leaving, he says, you're going to wear a jacket with that, right? As in, you're covering up your boobs, right? And I did. I ran and got a jacket. I was so mad at myself. I dimmed my light. Another time, I was heating up spaghetti for my stepson out of the goodness of my heart, initiated feeding him. And I combined the sauce and the pasta and put it in a bowl in the microwave and walked away. My husband walks over to the microwave and says, what are you doing? Don't you know you're supposed to heat the pasta and the sauce separately? Like, duh. And like laughing in my face. We got into a huge fight. Feed your own kid. I was so offended and mad. Like, I'm not seven. Like, don't tell me what to do kind of fight. So we've since really moved. That was a really big, I actually went to a therapist for that. That was so good for us, because it was like, if this is how it's going to be, I'm not really interested in being with my dad. So we have moved past that. I have communicated clearly. I don't want to be told what to do unless I ask. And he's heard me. And in turn, I've been working on gently saying, I got this. Thank you very much. Or sometimes he'll tell me what to do driving. And I just, I won't respond. So I don't need to get in the mud. So it's much, much better. So the question is, by the way, from his point of view, and some men in general, and from me in my past, we are helping. So The question is, how can we better understand each other? And what should we women be saying to men to help them get us? We usually say, I just want you to listen, but I want to hear from our guest point of view. And what can men do to know that they're helping us by not fixing us? Mm. Our guest has all the answers, or at least some of them. Philip Jones, I'm so glad you're here. He is a professor, a teacher specializing in music business and audio production, audio engineer, singer, songwriter, producer, and man who believes in therapy.
Yes, definitely.
And thinking before you speak. Full disclosure, Phil is a longtime friend of mine, and he also edits this podcast, so he knows this show better than probably me. Phil, I'm so glad you're here.
It is really amazing to be here again in a different capacity.
After almost 10 years of having this podcast, you've never been a guest. And you've been listening to every detail that's come out of this show and every guest. So how would you describe yourself?
I am typically very conscientious. I've grown to be this way. I was not always this way. I am constantly thinking about not only how I'm perceiving, but sometimes how I am coming off to other people. And it has been a struggle because, you know, that's not something that I normally, and most men don't normally think about. We're just like, hey, you know, we're going to be friends and we just do. However, when you're looking into getting into more serious relationships and understanding yourself, you know, I've learned to be more cautious and to be deliberate and intentional. Sometimes so very intentional, people don't believe me because I usually like to say this. My yes is my yes. My no is my no. My maybe means you didn't hear me the first time because I try to be overtly clear. But in a world where people aren't always that clear, many times I have to show people over time, like, oh, he was serious when he said he was going to help me. He wasn't, you know, going to be resentful if I didn't want help or need help, or his intentions were truly to be of service. Where most people, sometimes they want something else on the back end.
What do you mean by that?
Say, for example, someone, their car went flat and you happen to be either near or even if you're far, I'm like, cool, got you. I'll be there. Most people might say, hey, you know, pay me for gas, or, you know, they might expect a favor in return. Usually my mindset is I'm paying it forward. If I'm able to do it and I tell you that I'm going to do it, there's nothing else that needs to be, I guess, transactional. It's not transactional. Mm-hmm. It's just from the goodness of my heart. Because if I cannot do it, I will also say, unfortunately, at this time I can't, but let me call somebody or let me do something else. Let me see what I can do to help if I myself can't do it.
So you mean what you say, what you see is what you get.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you think, Phil, as a man who's got, I think, quite a bit of experience in relationships, and you sound self-aware, at least have a desire to be aware. What do you think the difference is between helping or hindering, fixing or controlling? Because I know you have some experience in this.
Yes. And there have been times where I thought that I was helping and I was actually being controlling.
Give me an example.
Oh, man.
Because it's, you know why I ask for examples and why I always start this podcast with an example?
Yes, because it's
when people learn the most.
It just feels uncomfortable to realize, oh, I made that mistake probably more than once.
It's called self-growth. Yeah, that's okay.
It is an interesting thing. I've tried to suggest that someone wear something different to the event that we were going to.
You're
going to
put a jacket on, that, aren't you?
I think I may have mentioned that the attire was a little... Okay, I'm not going to clean it up.
Tell me.
I was like, that looks too tight. And it was the pants, and it was... Like,
I loved
their shape.
Okay.
However, at the event we were going to, I didn't want their shape to be the thing that people were looking at.
So she looked hot.
She looked, yes, she
and
looked hot.
You didn't, what didn't you like about that? That other men would be like, ooh, she looks hot, I'm going to do that.
Ooh, this gets into a deep one. Okay, so in my opinion, men are typically concerned, in my experience, with whether or not the woman that they are with will draw attention that she may or may not be ready to deal with. And then we as protectors have to step in. Or we try to step in.
That's really interesting. I never followed up with my husband because I was so mad. But so you're telling me that I didn't take it that way as a woman. I took it as, I like your boobs. I don't want other people to look at them because I'm going to get jealous. You're saying that's not the case usually?
Yes, as I'm thinking, the times where, especially when I was in college, and you're dating someone and then you realize that, oh, I have a homeboy that I know if he didn't see us together, he would relentlessly continue and he would not stop to flirt and to say something about what you're wearing. Now, that guy may not be at this event, but there are at least 3 or 5 of them. And now I'm going to have to say, darling, you probably want to be careful talking to that gentleman the way he was looking at you. We understand what that guy's intentions may be, but from you all's perspective, oh, you're controlling, you're jealous, envious. Right. What do you mean? It can't be that serious.
So you're trying to actually help yourself from having to ward off unwanted advances.
Now let's be, and yes.
Okay.
And so now I also have to be understanding that whoever I'm with has been a woman way longer than me. And she typically can see or knows and also can deal with that.
Hmm.
However, there's some people I've dated and other people I've seen that don't deal with that well. They, it's like you can't keep laughing at dude jokes. He literally said something about you in the bedroom or alluded to things and, they were just joking. Oh, and so now you have to decide how much do I love this person and how much might they be a risk to the safety of our relationship?
So you're thinking safety, not embarrassment. Like,
I'm usually thinking safety, the embarrassment
for you. Like, yeah. Oh my God, you know, this guy's coming out of my girl and I'm standing right here. I look like a weakling.
Maybe not so much of a weakling is, cause, you know, we can handle things, and that's always the reality with men. Violence can be a blink away when it comes down to protection. And, you know, we will fight bears. We fight wars for the women that we love. We just try to avoid it. We don't want someone to bring unnecessary attention or drama and not necessarily know how to deal with it, or say, hey, you know, my husband likes my outfit as well. Do you want to meet him? Shut that down.
So how did the pants go over? How did that, you might want to change guidance?
It went the way that I had asked, but resentment started to build.
Yeah, man, I got my jacket on and I was pissed. Yeah, she changed her pants and she was like, God, you're controlling me, right? But what kept you from sharing with her what you just shared with us? Listen, I love the way you look, but I'm worried about your safety and protecting and all. Is it just the trigger moment?
But if that conversation is had before you go out,
yeah,
it's usually understood. If it's had at the time, it seems like you're coming up with something so that way you can get your way. It doesn't seem always as true, and it may not come off as true and intentional.
I see. Did you ever share with her later where you were coming from?
Yes.
Okay.
And then you start to understand some people love the attention. Some people
want. Well, of course, I wear tight things so I feel hot. And I guess, you know, want others to think that I'm hot. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, I don't know if I want people like being weird.
and being in Miami, things can definitely get weird.
Yes.
And so it modesty is, again, it's on the scale. Some people think, you know, we're in South Florida.
Right.
You can wear, you know, fishnet shirt.
Right.
Bikini. It's okay. Right.
Interesting. So that was a good example. Thank you. So just to clarify the story you told, from her point of view, and I would agree with it as a woman, it comes off as controlling, but from your male point of view, you're looking out for her safety and yours.
The safety of the relationship, yeah.
Not the physicality, not violence. What do you mean the safety of the relationship?
You want someone that's, one of the things I like to say, and I've learned, you want someone that considers you and won't put you in a situation where, oh, because of what I'm doing, and that goes for male and female, because of what I'm doing, it's negatively affecting the relationship. It's causing us to have drama that we don't need to have. Now, some guys care, some women care, some people don't. And that's why I say modesty and what we wear really depends, and how we carry ourselves depends on the relationship. I believe that these are conversations that you can have beforehand, and hopefully when they occur, like, oh yeah, maybe I don't, you know, as a guy, I don't want to wear these flip flops.
Right. But can we go deeper?
Go ahead.
So understood. But do you also think we need to, or it's better or it's healthier to, from the get go, accept the person as they are? For example, and maybe they don't work for you, for example, J-Lo. Shakes her booty. She's an entertainer, super hot body. She's always, I mean, what you see is what you get. And, you know, not just to, I relate to celebrities sometimes because on some level they're just like us, even though they're not. Ben Affleck, he marries her a second time and then gets pissed that she's the same person. Like, hello, you knew what you were getting
into.
And he kind of admitted it in an interview later. But so do you think, back to the pants and back to my shirt, back to your flip-flops, that we could work better on, this is who I picked?
Yes, that's one of the realizations that I've seen many of my friends go through. They date someone who may have been in entertainment, and because I've been in the music business, sometimes the entertainment means they are, the person they date might have come from the strip club.
Yeah.
And so now they're like, hey, I don't want you to wear these things
when we go
to the mall.
Right. Now you have to be better Betty Crocker, even though I met you at.
And not everyone, and I don't want to cast a wide net, not everyone who's a dancer, male or female, will try to dress provocatively, you know.
That's a good example.
But that's right. Just one example, because there are some people who are, I don't know, lifeguards.
Yes.
Or, you know, it's the point is, if you met me when I was wearing this,
right,
why are you trying to change me?
Right. So there you agree. Yeah, we do have to accept each other. And it's not just wearing things. It's, I mean, I'll admit and own that. I mean, my husband picked me. I'm like, we are in so many levels different. I'm East, he's West. You know, I'm like feelings and touchy-feely and gushy-gushy. And then sometimes we get a little upset with each other. Like, I'm like, why aren't you telling me how you feel? And then he's like, you need another hug? And I'm like, you know, but we are who we are. Yeah, accepting that would be, yeah, interesting. Okay, I'm writing that down.
Another thought that comes to mind when it comes to this, because I used to have this conversation with my mother, and my mother would say some of the same things, like, oh, you can't expect people to change. That's who you met them as. That's unfair. It's all these things.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of choice words. I speak very directly with my mom, with everybody. And I said, Ma, when the last time you seen a plant that doesn't change and grow? Not to say it starts to necessarily, you know, bromeliad turning into a rose, but roses do bloom.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't. So having said that,
that's true. People are,
should
all
grow.
Change. Yes.
Maybe not change, because change has a negative connotation.
Right. That is true.
But growing is very important. And that's one of the key things in this conversation I'd like to keep in mind, is someone growth centered. Not everyone is growth centered. So you might meet someone who has a certain proclivity to dress a certain way, and they are willing to grow. Some say you should accept me as I am. This is how I may choose to be forever. And if you cannot accept that, we might have to renegotiate and reset the examples and the rules for our relationship.
Best advice ever. I suggest on your first date or second date, no later than your third date, you know, asking that question in some way, you know, what's your growth interest? I'm who I am, sister. This is who I am. Especially as you get older, a lot of people say that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change for anybody. Okay. Now you know.
Yeah.
Next. Fixed or versus, you take it.
Fixed versus growth.
Right. Mindset. Fixed versus growth. Good. Good stuff. Do you have any experience, Phil, in being fixed or somebody?
Yes.
Oh, tell me.
Oh, yes. This one's it's going to hit close to home. Again, I was talking to my best friend about this as well. I can come across as condescending. And two or three people told me that in relationships.
I can see that. I'm your friend. I'm going to tell you the truth.
And this is an interesting story. My father, who's passed, Lord bless his soul, bipolar schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you learn when people have a mental illness, you try to let them know of their behaviors.
Oh.
So me and my mom, my sister, if my dad was acting funny, hey, do you realize that you just raised your voice at me? Mm-hmm. Do you realize that you called our house 30 times in a row? And if you call again, you start setting boundaries on what you're going to do and what you're not going to do and calling out behavior.
Is that helpful for mental illness?
Sometimes they're unaware of what they're doing. And so when you speak directly, you can't be like, Now they realize that they've got you by the emotions. And so when you speak to people calmly and directly and you're giving them how you're seeing them, that's a family trait. My mom does it. My sister does it. I do it. Outside of family, it comes across as condescending because you're reading someone's actions and you're telling them exactly what they're doing in such a calm tone that it gives a sense of superiority. But that's not my intention. And intention is different from impact.
Right.
And so I've learned that, that's what I do. In fact, this was less than a year ago that I had this revelation. And for those that I was like that with, I apologize. And I'm growing. But yes, that's one criticism that I would get.
Well, you caught it.
Yes, thankfully.
Okay. So the question was, have you had any experience being fixed? But it sounds like you're saying I became aware of, controlling.
Because someone mentioned to me as I was explaining their behavior, mm-hmm. because what I've grown to do is, like we all do, watch people over time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said you were going to pick me up at 8. It's now 9:45. Mm-hmm. And this is the third or fourth time that this has happened. Mm-hmm. I understand, here are the reasons and the excuses, blah, blah, blah. But I'm starting to notice that you have a habit of running a little bit late. I don't see it. But in what I just said, people will read that as, oh, you think you're better than me. You're kind of, you're talking down to me. I'm not your child. I'm like, so I might just have to, I'm using ChatGPT. I'm choosing my friends. And how do I change that? So I just don't speak to it as directly. I might just learn to say, hey, I understand that sometimes you're running a little bit late. I get it. If you can help me understand that, that would be great. But that doesn't work for me.
Yeah, even better, you could say how you feel about it.
Yes, I could. But by then, I've already, I know I've probably said something earlier. By then, I've established a pattern that they have, and I'm recognizing the pattern, and they may or may not want to see it and or make the steps to change.
So I am a very punctual person in my professional life. I work on deadline. I know I could tell you what time it is right now. I could feel time. I know time. I can't stand when people are late. It makes me anxious. And my husband, as his mother told me, God rest her soul, she's like, Mike's going to be late for his own funeral. And honestly, he probably will. And so I've known this when we were dating. And so one of my best friend's Belgian scenario was getting married. This was many years ago. We were just dating. And I was like, I told him, I knew he was going to be late for everything. And I was like, okay, so this is what time you need to be at my house. This is 3 weeks away. This is what time we need to leave. And this is the time. And this is the time. And this is the time. I didn't have the tools 8 years ago to say, when you're late, it makes me feel not important. It makes me feel anxious. I didn't have that. Anyway, so I'll wrap up the story. I knew he was going to be late. I had a spray tan. I got my makeup done. You'd think I was getting married. Anyway, so sure the hell enough, he calls me an hour and a half away. And he's like, oh my God, I'm all the way in Davie getting my haircut. There's so much effing traffic. And I was like, this guy is going to be late. He's not coming to my house on time. And I was so triggered. And I was like, you know, you do you. Get here when you get here. And I made a decision right at that point. I need to accept him as he is or dump him. How would he work in my life? Since I'm a very punctual person, I'm going to go to this wedding by myself and then I'll deal with my feelings later. So sure enough, I get ready and I'm literally walking out my door looking fabulous. My Uber is waiting for me and he's running up to my house with his clothes falling out of his hands. Oh my God, just wait. I just got to take a quick shower. I'm like, no, I'm not going to be an anxious person going to my friend's wedding. And I got in the Uber and I was so mad. And I was like, am I going to dump this guy? I really like him. But he's just not a punctual person, Lynn. You're not going to change him, nor should you. What are you going to do about it? So I'm like, I'm going to get him to the wedding. I'm going to be fine. And I get to the wedding. I was fine, but I was also fuming. And he literally shows up right before she walks down the aisle. And he's like, hey, baby. And I was really proud of myself for taking care of myself. It's still an issue. Well, I've decided to marry him and accept him. It's still an issue. I don't nag.
Yeah.
So it goes back to what we were just saying. You either accept the person or you don't. But I do say to him, you know, when you're late, it makes me anxious. I get anxious. We'll be fine. So I don't know how you relate to that as a man.
That's good. And I like hearing those stories. This is the reason why I, of course, like listening and editing the podcast, because I learn myself. And I'm hoping that the listeners are able to learn. The thing that is so cool about that is you learned to not take it out on others, and you're using your tools to continue doing what is important to you.
Told me, I thought you were going to break up with me. He's like, and we had a drink, and he said, you're being so cool about this. I'm like, I know, I am so cool. I want to kill you. But it took me... I guess learning from my other marriage, divorce, that yeah, I too can be controlling and wanting to change the other person, and it doesn't feel good.
That time thing, and I apologize for being late. That time thing bothers me as well.
My stomach was hurting.
I had a headache. I'm driving. I'm like, I gotta make it there.
So I also have patience too and understanding. Yeah, here it is, a Sunday. You're coming to me. Driving to my place to record this podcast. I have a lot of understanding and appreciation. You always answer the, you're consistently a very reliable person. But I also know what it's like to be on the other side with traffic down here. It's so stressful. My biggest concern for you when you said I'm late, I was like, God, I don't want him to stress, because I like it when people give me a break. I'm talking about consistently late.
Makes a difference. Yes.
Like, I'm still mad about it. It's like, budget your time, whatever. And yeah, see, I haven't totally accepted him. Look how mad I am.
Me being an audio engineer, when I was doing that job, time was crucial. My job as the audio engineer was to be there anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour before the session started. So that way I could check the mics, I could check the cables.
Right,
I could
get it.
Yeah, so I get it. But I also understand not everyone's like that.
And right.
It's so. I have a friend that we used to work at the same place, and I would give them a ride, and I'd say, okay, I'm going to be leaving at 3 o'clock.
And he was late, or that person was late.
Was not there.
And you're doing that person a favor.
And I said, hey, looks like we missed each other.
Oh, you left. You took care of yourself. That's great. That's good advice. Oh, that's so good.
But
were you mad about it?
No.
Okay, good.
No, not at all, because we have to learn how to prioritize ourselves.
Amen.
and work with boundaries.
Right. And not resentment.
Resentment gets no one. being mad and being resentful is what it's like taking poison and expecting the other person to be sick or die.
Yes.
It's just
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is.
It's holding on to anger.
What did you learn? What have you learned about yourself from your last relationship when it comes to this? It seems like you have an innate, because you're a teacher.
Yes.
I think teachers are smart. Well, they have to be. You have to know your shit. And like my husband's very, very smart. He's like you. He can fix anything. He's a born teacher, and so are you. So what have you learned about yourself in this last relationship that where you can be yourself and teach but not control?
I'm so glad you asked this question. I think it's difficult for anyone who has a profession that's that consuming to not bring their profession into the relationship.
Yes.
And I think we have to learn how to not do that.
How have you learned not to do that?
The unsolicited advice and the teacher stare or that we grow to do when someone's doing something that we may not like. You know, somebody's wilding out, we're like, and it's like the sign of okay, how do I learn? I just work with people and talk to people, and I ask them, hey, how did that feel? I think I did something. Did I do the wrong thing? Especially with my friends. You know, I'm always asking them, how are you perceiving me? And where might I need to grow or change? Because we all have blind spots.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. So what I'm asking is...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Maybe I'm not asking... So what have you learned, or what are you working... Because it sounds like you're always working on yourself. What have you learned, or what are you working on yourself on how to do you better for your next relationship when you're a natural-born teacher? And you have a natural inclination to help. And I think a lot of men do too.
I have so many answers to that. But let me go to the simplest one. Mm-hmm. What am I doing? I'm becoming self-aware of when I'm trying to teach someone something.
Who didn't ask for it.
Who did not ask for it. Unsolicited advice.
God, that's so good. Awareness is everything, isn't it?
It doesn't.
You don't need to be perfect. You're just... Aware is the first step.
I have a cousin. Cousin was dating this young lady. This young lady and I became friends. And they were a psychology major. So that's kind of why we became friends, because I like psychology. Mm-hmm. And I was going through a difficult time in my relationship. And they said, well, you know, you're never going to learn this without being in a relationship. Relationships teach you about yourself.
Amen.
And how you respond to conflict or even joy and pain. I said,
so true.
I think she's right. You cannot learn necessarily about, you can try to work on some things, but it's when other people tell you, you know, you don't have to teach me how to make eggs. I can.
God, yes.
You know what? My husband was like, you know, you really want to do.
No, I don't. In fact, I'm going to do the opposite because you told me to.
Which is the other thing that I was thinking about. And you know, I'm hoping someone else will comment on this. When we're young men, usually we don't have long conversations with each other.
Mm.
If we're playing basketball, if we're playing kickball, we don't have to know each other. We don't even know each other's names afterwards. We're like, okay, big shoe guy, or, you know, guy with the big forehead, or and so what
happens? Women walk away knowing all your problems, your bank account number.
And so what happens is when we meet someone, like I think I was learning how to build a slingshot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm watching them. They're like, you're not doing it right. I'm like, okay, what do I do? You got to do this way and this. Let me show you. We learn early.
Oh, deep.
Do things to show people how it's done. Don't explain. Then after you've done it, the person should be able to redo it.
There's no consideration for feelings.
If I'm playing baseball and someone throws a ball and it's a curveball and I'm swinging, somebody like, they're on my team. They're like, you keep swinging that fucking curveball. I need to show you how to read a curveball. Go stand over there. I'm going to throw a ball at you.
Idiot.
And so they throw the ball at you and it kind of goes around. You're like, oh, oh, yeah, so when you see them doing this, unsolicited advice. We are almost kings at that because that's how we grow and learn as young men. So when we care about, because only a friend's going to do that. The people who are on the opposite team, they're going to say, hey, man, I'm going to throw you a curveball. Let me show you how I do it. Right. No, they're not going to do that.
Right.
Your friends tell you that. So when we get into relationships, we're thinking, how can I be a better friend to my wife? I'm going to show her all the cool things that I've ever learned. She doesn't have to ask for anything. I'm going to help. I'm a wealth of information.
It's almost like your love language.
For some of us.
Controlling. But I get you. Yes. I get from your perspective.
Doing things, yeah.
So let's go back to the spaghetti example that I gave at the beginning of this podcast with my mic turned around that sounded hollow. When my husband was reprimanding me and not being grateful that I was making his kid something to eat. From your male perspective, what was he really saying?
Do you want this food to taste the best that it can?
No. Okay. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah. I recently made that mistake with someone who placed a pastry or something with foil in the microwave.
Oh, well, that's a hazard, of course. I mean, that's going to burn the place down.
But it didn't.
Oh. What did you say? What happened?
And I'm learning. Sometimes people have to learn. Not that the house has burned out. But, hey, I noticed that it has some black marks on that. Yeah.
I know, so there was fire coming. You want to, I might have already told this story in this podcast, but yeah, speaking of fire. So my husband's a firefighter. Yeah, whatever. And one Thanksgiving, I wanted to make this new sweet potato mash. I've never made it before. And it said, place at the top of the oven on whatever broil for, I don't know, it said, a minute and a half or a minute.
Okay.
So I do it and he's standing there and he's like, you know, you can't walk away from that. You gotta watch that. You gotta watch it. I'm like, yeah, yeah. Literally, I go, yeah, yeah. Roll my eyes. Take maybe 6 steps away. And he goes, God damn it. I turn around and I see fire coming out of the oven, licking the microwave. I start screaming. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? I get a towel because I've seen it on TV and I don't even use the towel. I wave it in the air like it's a white flag. What are we going to do? Oh my God, what are we going to do? He's like, open the effing door. They're going to fire door. It's going to come. It's going to be an embarrassment. I was screaming and laughing. He was not laughing. We had to put it out on the balcony because we live in a condo. And of course, all the alarms were going off and he's like, this isn't funny. This isn't funny. I'm like, I need to take a picture because it's damn funny. It's an example of he was trying to help to prevent a fire. And I was so triggered. The little brat in me was like, you're not going to tell me what to do. So I take full responsibility. And well, being a brat and agreeing with you that, yes, I can see how some of your male point of view is actually extremely helpful.
That was one of the things I was thinking about when we were talking about this subject. I was like, let me define some words and, you know, define helping. Make it easier for someone to do something by offering one's services or resources, giving assistance to, coming to the aid of, being of service of, improving, fixing, mend or repair, restore order or tidiness to something, especially one's hair, clothing or makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of those can be helpful and a hindrance. It depends on whether they are received or delivered correctly and with timing.
So how could somebody deliver it correctly? Like for the people listening right now saying, yeah, man, I have a tendency to want, I'm just telling him, you know, you might not want to yell at your kid. I'm just telling her your pants are tight for this event.
So in the instance where, and I'll say it, you know, in the classroom setting, a student came in wanting to be in my classroom to do some additional work. They stepped in after the tardy bell and they don't have my class. The minute I saw their face, I said, you don't belong here. Stop trying to skip class, blah, 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 blah. Because that's what sometimes they tend to do. All my students were quiet. They didn't say anything, but they're looking at me strange. And I'm like, did I do something wrong? They're like, we'll tell you later.
How cute.
And so I taught class, and the one who's their best friend, because she had invited him to work on a song together. And since, you know, I have a studio and everything in the mm-hmm. classroom. And I said, what happened? She said, actually, I had asked that person to come. I had told them that when they come in, they need to speak to you and to tell you that tell you that they've already done their work. They've gotten permission from a teacher. Blah, blah. And so now I'm like, I'm trying to hold back tears. I'm like, oh, I just yelled at a person for no reason or without enough information.
You made assumptions.
And I made assumptions. But the thing that I want to say is timing. She helped and she fixed the situation. Of course, I saw that person again, Matthew. I saw them again and I apologized. I said, Amen, I'm sorry. I didn't know. And it's like, no, Mr. Jones, just like you said, you're pretty consistent. And I, at that time, I could tell you were frustrated and I wanted to say more, but I realized that wasn't the right time.
Oh, wow. What a teaching moment from a young person to you.
And those are the things that I hope all of us can be more receptive to, is when someone gives us advice, help, that it may not be manipulative or coercive. It's about timing.
And tone.
And tone.
Tone.
Oh, I have a hard time with tone.
Yeah.
Who puts spaghetti sauce and spaghetti pasta together?
Judgment.
Or saying things as you're walking out.
Yeah. Passive aggressive.
So, that's how you want to fix it, huh?
Right. Because what are you really saying?
You should have listened to me the first time.
Right, up yours. Okay, so that's advice for the helper, we'll call that person. What do you think would be helpful for the person receiving? Trying to feed the stepkid or look cute in the evening or make sweet potato mash?
You know, I'm always going to try to approach it from two ends. Meaning, one, of course, try to be more patient and understanding. The other end of it is, even if you are frustrated, learn how to speak to the frustration. And over time, you'll figure out the right time when to say something.
That is good advice.
Yeah. There are times when you can just look at someone, and if you all really understand and love each other, you can give them please, not right now. Like, I hear what you're saying, and I know you probably mean well, but my spirit is not receiving it well at this time.
And what Phil just said is so true, but I find for myself, you know, when you're super triggered and you can't get to that point right there, you just take a deep breath and take a beat or five, because you really want to just smash that person's face in, but you take a breath and then you say, yeah, exactly how you feel. That's good. Good, good, good stuff. So, you know what I always do at the end? I always like to wrap it up because I know some people listen on their, you know, drive in, or not everybody's taking notes like me. What is your best advice for life in guiding or helping somebody in a sentence?
Self-awareness and patience. Listen to what people have to say, and at least be willing to put it in a box to address later.
Excellent. And what is your best advice for life for the people who may feel controlled?
Almost the same advice.
Okay.
Whether you're giving or giving advice or receiving advice, be patient, be self-aware, and think about the timing and tone. And sometimes you might have to put in your pocket for later, like, hey, maybe now's not the time.
And intention. What is my intention here? Is my intention to tell her how to make eggs because I am the egg master? Or is my intention to allow her to maybe actually teach me something? Maybe her eggs are pretty good. Can there be two good eggs?
I've been working. There's a coworker that I have, and I want to say their name, but they haven't given me permission to say so. But it's a good thing. It's a good thing. They would always say, "Impact sometimes beats intention," And what we intend to do is different from how it may land on someone. And when you care for people, either in romantic, professional, or daily relationships, we want to start considering our impact. I've learned, being a teacher and being in relationships, that some words impact people one way, and the same word may impact someone else a different way. So over time, you learn, and you're seeking that feedback to make yourself better with not only your intention, but also the impact.
That's a lot of self-awareness and great stuff. And I think the thing that, to wrap this up, I just want to reiterate to more women listen, I think, than men here, but for women to know, actually anybody who's on the receiving end of the helper quotes around that, that in general, what you're saying, Phil, is that you're, for men, safety, care and concern, protection is always at the forefront.
And it shows up differently.
Oh, and it shows up differently.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we learn how to feel our emotions and express our emotions. We've been taught early that, oh, you cut your finger while you were climbing a tree. Mm-hmm. You're crying. I'm not going to use the words that someone would say, but if you're 10 or 15 and you're crying because you cut your hand on a tree.
Don't cry like a little bitch. I've heard that. God, my dad never, I remember hearing that from somebody I know. And I was like, to that person's son, I was so crushed. And but I'm a girl.
That's the way we grow up.
Yeah. I think that's rough, but that's just the facts.
That's just the facts. And in our relationships, there are things that hurt, and we may not know how to properly express it. And so it usually turns into the emotion that people can respect the most from a man.
Anger.
Anger.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah.
I was cutting the whatchamacallit, and I'm trying to get dinner prepared, and I accidentally, cut my finger. And so now, fucked up dinner. What am I going to do? She's going to be, instead of, hey, baby, I made a mistake. I might have to get rid of dinner. I'm kind of feeling less than right now because I wanted to do this to make your
day lighter.
That
would be amazing. And that's tough. Yeah. Poor man.
Well, I'm careful to say this. What can happen and what has happened is when men become that vulnerable, she may receive it. But we pray and hope that when she's mad, she doesn't bring that up again.
That would be really abusive, and you should get rid of her if she does. Yeah. Women in general, healthy women, just people. When women love it when men are vulnerable in general, healthy women.
Healthy women.
It creates a bond.
Yeah.
And especially when it's difficult for men, it's so appreciated by a woman. So appreciated. Like, wow, I know this is really hard for you. Thank you for sharing that part with me. Yeah, if a woman or anybody brings that up, that's hitting below the belt, and you should dump them immediately. Wow.
I have had to. Well, okay. I will not share another vulnerable moment with you. I will move on to something else.
Yes. That goes for anybody.
It happens.
Good stuff, Phil. Good man stuff. Okay, I wish you happy awareness in your next relationship. This is very helpful for us to understand how men think and where you're coming from. You can get in contact with Phil at philgoodproductions.com, P-H-I-L, good. Feel good, like feel good. I love that. And on social media, IG, you're on TikTok?
Yes, I'm on TikTok as well.
Same thing, Feel Good Productions.
Feel Good Productions. So good, I put my name on it.
Yeah, so good. That's amazing. Please come back and don't wait another 9 years.
I won't.
Sing me a song on our way out. Sing me a man song.
Slowly my eyes begin to see that I need you near and with me at all times. Ooh, I put myself on the spot. That's a Boys to Men song that I used to love to sing in college.
I'm so vulnerable. I love that in men.
I need auto-tune.
No, you don't. You need to be you. Thank you for listening, everybody, and see you on the next Advice for Life with Lynn.
A reminder to everybody, submit your questions on adviceforlifewithlynn.com. And while you're there, sign up for my free email. You'll be the first to get my weekly blog on how to live consciously and peacefully. You'll also get access to my free happiness guide when you sign up. Also, I'm looking for guests with different ways that they can help the Advice for Life with Lynn followers. So reach out, maybe if you think you've got something to say and you want to be on the podcast. Lastly, please subscribe and rate my podcast on iTunes. I really care about what you think, so tell me how I'm doing. I want your thoughts. The links are in the show notes and also on the website. I want to help as many people as I can with this podcast, so your shares, your subscribes, and reviews help us gain visibility in the iTunes store and they help us reach more people. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. And remember, there is nothing we can't talk about.